Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm Kimberly, fully vaccinated Johnson in D.C. Today, my guest is actor Billy Baldwin. You know him from films such as Backdraft and Slither. He's Alec's brother. He's a staunch Democrat. He always tweets about politics. We're going to be talking about all that, as well as a possible new project with his wife, China Phillips. But before we do, I always try to keep these intros short. I do have a tier on Patreon that allows listeners to listen ad-free and with a much shorter intro. The Start Me Up podcast is an independent podcast supported by listeners, and it's woman-run. It's patrons who keep the show going. If you enjoy today's conversation, take a look at the About page. Check out some of my past guests. You'll see most of the time I talk to political people, but occasionally, I interview actors because I used to be one. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. I do two free shows a week, Mondays and Wednesdays, and they're followed up by What's Up with Me, a show for patrons only after each free show. Check out the variety of tier options at patreon.com/startmeup. You can make a one-time donation by checking out the text in the Patreon description. I've included a link that allows you to donate through PayPal. You can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Just stop by the iTunes/Apple Podcast Store, become a subscriber, it's free, and while you're there, please rate the show and leave me a review. I would really appreciate it. Now please enjoy my conversation with Billy Baldwin. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Well, thanks for having me, Kimberly.
I'm excited to have you for so many reasons, and I've got so many questions for you. But you know, I'm excited because, of course, I was a fan of your movies. I've been a fan. Oh, I just have to tell you this too. I mean, I've always liked China, and I thought your wife, China Phillips, I've always thought she was so freaking beautiful. But what's really funny is, like, I'm kind of like a hard rock, you know, 70s classic rock. I do like pop music too. But so, like, the Wilson Phillips was not really my sound, although I appreciated them. But now I've been watching China on her show called California Preachin', and I learned about how the song Hold On came about, and I listened to her stories, and now I'm like this huge fan. I went and I memorized all the words, and I listened to it all the time, and I sing along, and it's just like so funny how things like just because I listened to her, now I have a full, like, this whole new appreciation for that music. So I just kind of had to throw that in there.
Yeah, listen, you could have her on your show, and it would be, you know, an entire season, her just talking to you about just your childhood alone. Nothing to do with the Mamas and Papas or Wilson Phillips or marrying Billy Baldwin or our children or our son's battle with cancer. None of that stuff. You could just talk about her growing up with John Phillips, Warren Beatty, Jack Nicholson, Dennis Hopper, Michael Jackson, Mick Jagger. And that in and of itself could be a season for you. I mean, her story of her childhood and her early life is so remarkable, and how she is not a Hollywood casualty and statistic is a true testament to, like, how she's this odd dichotomy of, like, a delicate little butterfly and a ferocious, like, tiger mom all rolled into one, you know?
Wow. Yeah. And it comes off. I mean, I'm not religious, but I consider myself to be a spiritual person. And even though her, you know, religion and the way I see things don't necessarily fully align, I do see certain kinds of parallels. I mean, in Christianity, which I wasn't even raised with any religion at all, but there's faith, and I do have faith. And so I appreciate that in her message. But I have to say, when I watch her show, what I like the most is when she talks about her childhood, but also when you guys are on, because that segment is called Chili, because of,
well, we pretend, like, you know, there's like Brangelina and Jaylee and what was the one with Brad Pitt?
Brangelina.
Oh, Brangelina, but there was another one with, like, J-Lo and...
Yeah, J-Lo. I know, there's been a bunch of them.
Who's J-Lo with now again?
Bennifer. So it's Ben and Jennifer.
Bennifer. So it was like Bennifer. So we pretend that we were so big in the early 90s, which we were.
Yes.
Big enough to have a paparazzi nickname, which for some reason we never got. And I pretend that they call us Chili. There's no truth to that. But my motto is always, don't let the truth stand in the way of a good story. And that's why you find me here today on your show. I'm just going to tell nothing but lies. And it's going to be incredibly dynamic and interesting and funny as hell. So we pretend that we have this segment called Chili that's based on China and Billy. It's so much fun because I just sit there for however long the segment is. It could be 7 or 8 minutes. It could be 12 or 13 minutes. And it's just me talking about how Ricky and Lucy, the marriage is, and how the hell we're still together after 30 years. I have no clue.
And then, okay, so.
I will tell you, she will say that she's not religious either. She will talk about it being her faith, not her religion. And I am not on the same, I'm like you, I'm not on the same page with China either, but I totally admire and respect someone, whether it's Islam or it's Buddhism or it's Hinduism or Catholicism, Judaism, Christianity, or playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody is like truly devoted and truly committed and truly immerses themselves in devoting and learning about it, I admire that, because she's doing in her the depth of her commitment to her faith is deeper than anything that I'm committed to in my life. And I really, really respect it. The same thing, like you said, with her music. I was a Zeppelin, Stones, Beatles, Who guy. Yeah. You know, I was like a classic rock guy, but I'm never one of these people that says, just because it's not my thing,
right,
it's not good. There's many other artists and many other genres of music that aren't my thing, but I can't deny that is, like, that takes incredible gifts and incredible talent to be able to do that. And I so admire their ability to do that. Of course, you know, I'm a huge Wilson Phillips fan. Yeah. And I've seen their shows 100 times. If I wasn't married to China, obviously that wouldn't be the case. But my taste in music has gotten more eclectic as I've gotten older. I don't just tell my kids if it's not the Rolling Stones, then turn it off. You know, I have appreciation for stuff beyond pop and rock. So China would tell you that it's, you know, her Christianity is not her religion, it's her faith. I admire her. I support her. I will continue to support her. I tell her sometimes that you have to be careful of the minefield that sometimes will lead you to uber. Again, I don't even have a problem with Republican politics or conservative politics, but when it takes you down the path of conspiracy theory, extremism of the neocon right of the Republican Party or beyond into QAnon, where this is where the country is sort of veered off the rails, then it can be very, very scary. My wife and I she's sort of apolitical the way I am. I wish that she was more interested politically, but she does have a lot of people that follow her on California Preaching, which obviously is a direct theft from her parents' song,
right,
California Dreaming. And she does really wonderful work there, but she does get a lot of people that support her that say, you know, lose your husband's not as steeped and equally yoked in his faith as you are, dump him, which is such an ironic hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, lose him. He's more of a commie than his loser brother, Alec. And you know, there's all of this, you know, judgment. It's so like not the teaching of Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to get people to see. One thing that I would love to work on with anybody, including you, I tweeted recently, you know, the politics of Trump and the isolation of quarantine during the pandemic has made me feel closer to my social media friends like Kimberly Johnson. And it's made them feel more family to me, and I feel closer to them than my own family members and my own friends, and many of them, like you, I've never met.
Right.
And I just feel there's a number of people that followed me, and they trolled me, and they heckled me, and they attacked me, and I started getting into it with them, and I went back and forth. I said, well, what do you think about this? I got no problem with that. Well, what about that? Sure thing. Uh-huh. I go, well, what about this? And they're like, why would I have a problem with that? And then I literally followed them back and DM'd them and gave them my cell phone number and said, call me immediately.
Wow.
And I have this stranger who's trolling me now on the phone with me, who I'm like, dude, why are we fighting?
Yeah.
We don't wholly agree on this issue, but the consensus and the common ground between you and I on this topic is well over 60%. It's probably 80%. So why are we pretending like we don't agree, we're in total disagreement, and that we don't like each other when we're like three quarters of the way there?
Yeah.
And now this guy like calls me and FaceTimes me and wants to put me on FaceTime with his mother to sing happy birthday to her. Like we're buddies. And he's like a country and Western singer that lives on the outskirts of Omaha. Like we have nothing in common.
Oh my God.
And there's another guy that was like a long haul trucker in North Carolina that was disposing nuclear wastewater from like North Carolina up into the like Michigan Peninsula. The guy swore up and down, he vowed that he hated me, and now we're like friends.
Wow.
And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand is like, we have to start to come. I tweeted this morning, I was like, why did Osama bin Laden bring this country together in a way that we haven't been together since probably the Second World War? And Donald Trump has divided us in a way that we probably haven't been divided since the Civil War.
Yeah.
And I am trying to reach out to those people and find to show, like, you think we don't like each other? You don't think we have a lot in common? Bullshit, man.
Yeah.
We both put our pants on one leg at a time, both of us. I don't care if I'm a New Yorker who's a Hollywood liberal and you are, you live in Omaha or you live in the heartland.
Yeah.
Sorry. I disagree with you. And I'd love to try and find ways to demonstrate, that's one of the shows that I'm working on developing, is going out into the heartland, kind of like On the Road with Charles Kuralt.
Oh, okay.
You know, and showing people in like the Osgood Files and doing positive stories and bringing, showing some of the stories about how you and I became friends and we feel like we know each other and we feel closer and we've never met. Like,
right.
Let's do it and meet.
Right. And you know, I know Sarah Silverman kind of did something along those lines, and she was the Hollywood elitist celebrity who kind of got David Weissman to go, wait a minute, I might be wrong here. And you know, it was a conversation that they had that led him, that, you know, David Weissman was a MAGA. He's been on my show a couple of times, and he was a full-blown MAGA.
We're friends. He's one of the guys that's one of my, I feel closer to him than some of my high school friends, some of my college friends, and some of my family members. And I'm not talking about distant family members. I'm talking about, like, my brothers.
Yeah. No, and I totally understand.
All my brothers are a brand. I mean, they're known. And, you know, there's stuff going on with my brother Steven that has created a strain in the relationship and sort of an estrangement that I wouldn't have a problem with if you supported Trump the first time. I do have a problem with if you supported Trump the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have a problem with if you're espousing this QAnon craziness about how Trump is going to be installed as the president, you know, on Friday, you know,
right.
And that the election is illegitimate. So
exactly.
I can't have anything to do with those people. Sorry.
I actually had those two tweets in my notes that you just talked about. Specifically the one about your family members and that you're closer, because I think we all can relate to that, where, you know, I mean, I have an aunt who is fully MAGA. She, and you know what? She would be Q if she understood the internet. She doesn't really hang out on the internet. She listens to talk radio. But if she understood the internet, I'm positive that she would be into the QAnon conspiracy, because she's just that far. And it really, you know, I mean, there are people that I've met on Twitter, like you, like Kirk Acevedo, like David Weissman, all these people, and it's like, it's true, there's a camaraderie between us, we're all fighting for this country, and you know, we're there for each other, and it creates these relationships. And it's funny to have these social media relationships, but you know, I actually met my boyfriend on social media. So now social media is just this way to be, you know, to meet people and become friends, like the new bar or something for people who don't want to go to bars anymore. And
it's
like,
it's the new Bumble. Well, Bumble's the new, yeah. Well, that's cool. I need to take breaks from it. You'll see now since Biden won that sometimes I don't go on my Twitter and I don't get involved with Twitter. I need a break for 3 or 4 days at a time for my sanity. And then I'll just jump on and see what people are talking about. And I'll give some social commentary here and there. But I think we got to start. We have to keep fighting, draw the line in the sand and don't cross it, and fight when we need to fight.
Mm-hmm.
But offer an olive branch rather than smash somebody in the head with a, you know, a Louisville Slugger, we have to offer an olive branch and find the common ground and find the consensus and try to come back together. Again, look what happened after 9/11. We had, you know, all of our allies were in our corner. All of everybody neutrally was in our corner, and all of our enemies weren't in our corner, but they were like, not, they're not, they're like, look, we saw the World Trade Center fall too. So America's and their allies are going to do what they have to do. And I sure as hell ain't getting in the way, because I'm not messing with this coalition that they put together after Bin Laden took down the Twin Towers. And all of a sudden, Cheney and Rumsfeld and the machine went into Iraq for reasons that had nothing to do with Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, or 9/11, and they lost half the world.
Yeah.
So if they had not gone into Iraq, and President Biden, who was following the orders of President Trump, to be honest with you, was with withdrawing, and I don't think anybody could see after trillions of dollars and 20 years of investment, I don't think anybody could see the Afghan government and the Afghan military and the Afghan police collapsing and just truly disintegrating in a matter of 72 hours to the Taliban. Having said that, I don't want to be one of these guys that can't assign any blame and can't say Trump only does wrong and Biden never does wrong. Could it have been, could we have had the foresight to anticipate some of the stuff that happened? Certainly not the Taliban taking over in a matter of days. But I think that the withdrawal from there, there has to be some accountability. And I'm a Democrat that's willing to do that. If I see a problem, if I see a mistake, I'm not afraid to call it a mistake. And, you know, I think that there's stuff that could have been done differently so that the withdrawal was not as chaotic. If we had put in, if we had done sort of a surge, I'm not just making this up. If we had done sort of a surge to get everybody out of there safely and done that over the course of, I don't know, 90 days and then left, and then it fell to the Taliban in a month or a week or 2 days, you know, that was up to them. I mean, we invested 20 years and trillions of dollars. And if they can't, I don't think it's more of a tribal situation over there. And I don't think there's certain parts of that world over there that weren't meant for democracy. And maybe Afghanistan is one of them.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at Biden is, first of all, I think that he is, you know, he's got information we don't. And I absolutely criticize Democrats when I believe they should be criticized. I mean, I used to write blog posts about anybody, whether they were male or female, Democratic senators or House representatives that weren't supporting the Equal Rights Amendment. This was back in like 2013. And, you know, I wasn't friendly, and I would literally threaten them with negative blog posts because I had the good fortune of being on a lot of, you know, influential political pages. And, you know, just was in the right crowd and I was blogging with the right people. And I could use that to basically threaten them to like support women. And unfortunately, I had to threaten some of them. And eventually they did. I won't say who they are. And I didn't like doing it. It always made my stomach hurt. But it's like, if you're a Democrat, then you should be supporting equal rights for women, period. There's no reason not to. And so it's very important to criticize. But the way I look at the Afghanistan thing is, overall, in the bigger picture, I think it was fairly successful. You know, could it have been better? Of course, because everything, there's always room for improvement no matter where we are. But I think that, you know, I was going to ask you about this because I watched the MSNBC 9/11 special, and this is the first time I, you know, I mean, I guess I've watched some things when Trump was president, but it really hit me this time watching this, that so much of the fear that we were sold after 9/11 led to this hatred of other, and it led us to where we are now. This, it's not just that, because it was a combination of the toxic right-wing radio, Fox News, you know, Trumpism, and then foreign adversaries weaponizing our social media against us. There's all kinds of things, but it just really struck me like, wow, this terrorist attack on American soil by foreign adversaries gave the GOP this ammunition to use to scare Americans. I remember at the time I was working for this company, it was like a bone china, selling bone china, and my boss was a conservative, and another sales rep was a conservative, and then the rest of us were Democrats. And I remember, you know, I wasn't even that political then, but I kept hearing them talk about the fear. I want a president who's going to stand up to the bullies, and I want my president to fight. And they had bought into this bullshit narrative, like we had to live our lives on the offensive because of other, meaning at that time Muslims. But it's just kind of sad to me to see how we have gone from, you know, first we had 9/11, and then obviously I think George Bush literally led to Barack Obama, but then the racist freaked out, and the combination of the fear campaign and a black president in a very racist country led to Donald Trump. Even though we voted for Hillary Clinton, we did. The numbers were there for Hillary. We voted. But what
Hillary Clinton said something after 9/11 that I don't remember the quote. It was like, it was better to be wrong and strong than to be right and weak.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I don't agree with that. I mean, yeah. You know, after 9/11, you're right. 9/11 was a major contributing factor to, I mean, you know, it was the first attack on U.S. soil since Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. And that was a military base that wasn't, you know, directly attacking civilians, even though there were civilian losses. This was a civilian attack. Mm-hmm. I think that in part contributed to where we find ourselves today. But I think you just touched on it more than anything else. I think it pulled off the scab of racism and racial tension in this country. And I think people aren't willing to realize that a lot of white Americans are uptight with the fact that the white majority is becoming the minority, and the Muslim ban is racist. Mm-hmm. Build the wall is racist. Voter suppression is racist. Mm-hmm. Gerrymandering is racist. Look at Jim Jordan's district in Ohio. If they did a legitimate district in that area in Ohio, Jim Jordan would never get elected in the Cleveland part of Ohio. So a lot of people in this country want to go back to the post-war greatness of America, where, you know, with the sexism and racism, where daddy works and mommy stays home and raises the kids, and the white majority is comfortably in control. Mm-hmm. And we don't live in that world anymore. And if we don't build the wall on the southern border, and more brown people come in from Mexico and Central America, once they get to Arizona and Texas and California, are they going to vote for the party that was trying to build the wall to keep them out in the first place? I don't think so. Right. I mean, that's really baffles me. I live in California. My children's high school is 63% Mexican.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll be in a restaurant and I'll see some guy, a Mexican guy with his family, wearing a Trump 45 red MAGA hat. And I'm like, I can't even have a car. I'm just baffled by that. So
I know. You know what? I need to take a quick break, and then we will be back after this message. Okay, we're back. I want to ask you, though, about the fact that, okay, so I touched on Afghanistan, but what I want to know from you, like, I want your opinion on this, basically. So, you know, Biden lost some approval ratings because of Afghanistan, but it's predictably back up. And it seems to me that he's just out of fucks. He doesn't give a shit what the GOP thinks of him. He doesn't care what the critics are saying about him. What he is focused on right now, in my opinion, is doing the right thing. He's got those child tax credits. He's trying to get the infrastructure bill. So just recently, he told Pelosi and Schumer that he's ready to start pressuring the centrist Democrats like Manchin and Sinema and whoever else about this voting rights bill. So I want to know, first of all, my first question is, how confident are you that he can? I trust Biden. I don't know about Manchin. I don't know about Sinema. How confident are you that Biden can get that done?
I think that they can get it done. I'm confident in Biden and his staff. I'm confident in Pelosi and the absolute, like, Margaret Thatcher ironclad fist. She rules all of the parliamentary procedures. When she was decided to remain as the speaker, I said, you know, it's time for a change. We need some younger blood. Maybe it's a guy, preferably a woman. Maybe it's a woman of color. And let me tell you something. That woman is so impressive. She makes gaffes, and she's a lightning rod. She's very divisive. Yeah. I criticized her during the State of the Union address when she started ripping up the speech. I just felt like that was not necessary. I mean, I understand when she did the patronizing hand clapping, that was kind of enough.
Yeah.
When she tore up the speech, I was just like, don't give them a chance to throw gasoline on the fires. Mm-hmm. Some silly, petty thing that she did. The person who I don't trust, and I know personally and not well, but I used to know fairly well, is Schumer. Mm-hmm. And I wish Schumer would get a little bit tougher. And I think that they can get this done. I don't know what they're going to do about the the filibuster.
Oh.
I don't know what they're going to do about the filibuster, but I have a degree in political science. I interned on the Hill. I've worked very actively in politics for decades. I don't really have the knowledge and the expertise in the history of the filibuster to say definitively that it should stay or it should go. My gut is telling me it's antiquated. It's time to move forward without it. The Republicans are terrified of that, even though, you know, I only think there's one person in the history in my lifetime, there's only one person that's more evil, and this is he newly won this crown, because I always gave this title to Dick Cheney. Mm-hmm. And I now think Mitch McConnell in the last 5 years has taken that trophy mm-hmm. from Dick Cheney. I really truly think he's the truly the most evil, and he's the most hypocritical I've ever encountered in all the history of politics.
Totally agree.
Or maybe not the history, but certainly in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And I know he's absolutely terrified that if they take the filibuster away, we're just going to run roughshod mm-hmm. over them. But I have, that was a long-winded answer for, I think that they can get this done. Mm-hmm. I think the filibuster is going to be maybe critical in trying to get this done on a number of fronts, not just with, you know, voting rights, but also with some things that we need to get done with the economy, mm-hmm. Some stuff we need to get done with climate change, some of the stuff we need to get done with money in politics, all absolutely critical. If we want to restore it's an imperfect system, American democracy, but if we want to restore some of the integrity, we go a long way in doing that if we can get money out of politics and get rid of citizens united.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so then the other part of my question is that Biden is, he's making bold decisions. He's not apologizing for it. He's really the epitome right now of strong, bold leadership. So whether you agree with him or not, he's like, I'm doing it and I'm sticking by it and I'm not listening to the naysayers, meaning the Republicans. So I'm just wondering because, you know, I mean, I'm seeing people on the internet. There's always going to be that crowd who says we're doomed and we're never going to win and they're going to cheat and this is it and the country is over. And I mean, I get scared myself, but I stop before I say we're doomed because I do not want to collectively manifest doom. I want to be able to overcome what we're experiencing with this right wing extremism. So my question is, do you think, because this is what I'm hoping Biden's bold leadership like bleeds out, the confidence that he's oozing right now is going to hopefully, you know, kind of ooze out into Democratic voters so that they will feel energized and they'll feel strong, because we're sick and tired of seeing the Democrats tiptoe around stuff and treating the Republicans as if they're some kind of like normal party. Right now they're not. And
well, they bring a feather duster to a gunfight. I mean, you gotta bring a gun to a gunfight. I hate to use that metaphor.
Yeah.
It offends people, but that's the problem with the Democratic Party is that offends people, and that they do bring a feather duster to a knife fight or a gunfight. And we have to be able to go toe to toe and blow for blow. I think a big key for this is going to be, look, Americans are short-sighted, narrow-minded, selfish, pocketbook wallet voters. So if the economy continues to improve, then we're going to be able to not go after we have to do two things. We have to do what Stacey Abrams did in Georgia across the country, and not in all 50 states, but in the critical 5, 6, 7 states, we need to do we need to win 7 Nobel Prizes, not just one in Georgia. We have to do across the country a major get out the vote, and not just for low-income voters and minority voters. We really have to get out the vote. And the other thing we have to do, which I think will come with is polling and consumer confidence, and as unemployment lowers and the economy starts to recover, is go after those moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, conservative Republicans, suburban, Republican housewives that are looking for an excuse to give Biden the keys to the Ferrari and let him continue to have control of the Senate, the House, and the executive branch. I'm terrified that we'll lose control of the House in this next election. I don't think it will happen. I think it would be inexcusable if it does happen. Yeah. I think the after the 5 years of Trump, six years of Trump, the year of the election, the 4 years in office, and the years since, if we don't have the ammunition to extend our lead in the Senate and extend our lead in the House, I'm not talking about sweeping numbers like after Watergate and stuff like that, but to have a little bit more of a comfortable control where we're not like doing a Walenda high wire act in the Senate all the time. I think those two things are critical. If the economy continues to improve and consumer confidence continues to improve and the boring, unemployment's an important one, but the stock market and people's retirements continue to brag about that like Trump. We may be able, if we can turn out the vote and get enough crossover votes, that's going to be, it's really big what's coming up in 2022. It's really, really big, because that or an indictment are the only things that are going to keep Trump. Apparently Trump is saying, do you believe this? I'll ask you, Kimberly, do you believe this guy? If they take control of the House and Trump is not indicted, even if Republicans want Trump to run again, do you think Trump runs?
Yes.
And do you think he could win?
I don't know if he could win. And I only say that because of the last election. But then again, people have a tendency to change their minds about things, especially if, I'll give you a perfect example. My car mechanic, I have two car mechanics that are both conservative, and they told me they don't like Trump. And so I felt like they probably either didn't vote in 2020 or they voted for Biden. When I went and I dropped my car off not too long ago, and the guy, the owner of the shop, was pissed off because he was vaccinated, his brother wasn't, and he's pissed off that he hasn't been able to go on vacation and he still has to wear a mask. He did the responsible thing of getting vaccinated, and he's pissed off at the anti-vaxxers. And so I said something about, I can't remember, I said something about Biden. He's like, well, he's not doing anything. And I mean, he's my car mechanic, so I don't want to get into an angry fight with him. So I try very hard to, walk that line. And I said, well, I disagree with you that Biden's not doing anything. I said, he can't make people take the vaccine. He's making it readily available. And I said, and the only good thing I'll say about Trump is the warp speed thing. And, and that vaccinations were, they were working on vaccinations at that point. And so I said, as presidents, they can only do so much to get people vaccinated. I said, then, Trump talked about getting vaccinated and he was booed. So my car mechanic's like, yeah. And then we just kind of switched the subject. So I look at my car mechanic and I think, what's he going to do? Is he going to vote for Trump in 2024? Because he right now thinks Biden isn't doing anything. So is he going to think,
how you could think Biden's not doing anything. I mean, he rolled out the vaccinations at a record rate and then he hit a wall. So they had several hundred million vaccinations and then they hit a wall because of all of this disinformation that's out there. Now he's trying to impose mandates, which people are freaking out about. Mm-hmm. But we all know you can't go to a public, you can't go to a public elementary school or university unless you've had mumps, measles, rubella, polio, right. All of these were mandated before. In fact, there was some vaccinations where doctors came right into the classroom You didn't even have to get a permission slip from your parents, and they came right into your classroom and shot you in the arm with a polio vaccine. So this is stuff that has saved lives. It's now got FDA approval, and it's fine. If you don't want to get the vaccine, here's the three things that you need to do. All right, let me do a list of what it's going to sound like. You don't go to public school. You don't get on a plane. You never travel outside of the United States again. You never go to a restaurant in America that says no shirts, no shoes, no service. Now it says no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no vax, no service. That is my right as a restaurant owner.
Yeah.
You're not coming into my restaurant.
Right.
So if you don't want to travel, if you don't want to go to Italy, if you don't want to go into private businesses, establishments, if you don't want to go to public school, if you don't want to serve in the military, mm-hmm. And here's what I want them to do. You sign a contract that says, if I don't believe in the science now, it's simple. This is what the contract says. If I don't believe in the science now, I don't believe in the science then. And that means if I won't take the vaccination now and I get sick, which just happened to my friend, and he went to the hospital, he's 70 years old, double pneumonia, oxygen level dropped to 83.
Oh my God.
Almost had brain damage, and they saved him. And every time they took him off the oxygen, his oxygen level went from 95, 96 down, plummeted down to 80 at 70 years old. That sounds like you're going to die to me. Somehow this guy recovered. And I'm like, it's interesting how you wouldn't take the vaccination, which was FDA approved, but you will go into the emergency room and now you believe in the science that will save your life. So do me a favor, sign this piece of paper that says, if I don't believe in the science now, I will not believe in the science then. And if I don't get the vaccination now, I will not occupy an emergency room bed, an ICU bed, and have them save my life. I'm just going to tough it out like I do when I catch the flu in the winter. Yeah. I'm just going to tough it out and roll the dice and let's see what happens. Okay. If you're willing to do that, then let's talk. Okay, no public schools, no military, no leave the country, no private businesses, and no hospitalization. Okay, right. We'll set up anti-vaxxer hospice care for you, and you could have a voodoo doctor take care of you or something. I don't know.
I totally agree. And then but back to my mechanic. He is a conservative. So regardless of the fact that he doesn't like Trump, I don't know exactly what his reasons were for not liking Trump, but he's still listening to probably Fox News. He's still listening to the disinformation. So with that disinformation for X amount of years, 4 years in between, and then you're going to, he's deciding that Biden is somebody he doesn't like, and he's hearing the news and not hearing the legitimate news. He's hearing the fake news, and so he's going to base his decision on who he's going to vote for. Now, frankly, I also wanted to ask you about Ron DeSantis, because to me, whether it's Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis or whoever is going to be, if they picked Romney, which I doubt they would, I would be less concerned, because I feel like now Romney is a pariah in his own party. That party is so extreme. Romney is way too down to earth for them to consider him, and I don't think that he could win. I think the only way they could win is A, by cheating, and B, by having an extremist in there. So I wanted to ask you about Ron DeSantis. Do you I'm still terrified of him no matter what, but initially I was more terrified that he was going to be the nominee and possibly win. I'm not sure now what's happening in Florida with school districts fighting his bullshit defunding schools with mask mandate. What do you think of him? How frightened are you of him?
Well, he doesn't scare me as much as Trump, but he's completely incompetent. He's completely mismanaged, as the executive of the state of Florida. Listen, the coalition that you have to hold together between moderate Republicans and uber extreme Republicans is pretty, the divide has gotten wider and wider, and they need to move to the middle if they want to win a national election. They need to move towards a guy like Romney. I mean, Romney is a fiscal conservative who's socially either fairly progressive or at least open-minded. Mm-hmm. He passed socialized medicine in the state of Massachusetts.
He did.
So I think that he's probably too far left for a lot of those people, but they definitely need to come up with somebody who is more middle of the road. That's a fiscal conservative and more socially moderate. Otherwise, they're not going to win. I mean, that's my personal opinion. DeSantis does scare me, but I think DeSantis is there's too many unforced errors or too many self-inflicted mm-hmm. wounds mm-hmm. for him to survive that process. You know, look what happens every cycle. There's somebody that jumps out to the lead, and then like 3 weeks. I mean, look what happened with Biden. I mean, Biden was dead until Super Tuesday, and I can't remember Clyburn or was somebody a politician, Clyburn. A congressman in go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was Clyburn.
In South Carolina that like sat down with his pastor or a couple of pastors, and they completely revived and completely saved the presidency in South Carolina. And then on Super Tuesday, he was flatlining, and they gave him the paddles, and all of a sudden he jumped out to a very, very commanding lead. And that literally, I don't even know if that happened over the course of a matter of weeks. I think it happened in a matter of days.
Yeah.
I mean, he was truly back from the dead.
Yes.
And, you know, I remember in 90, in 91, when Bush Sr. was running for reelection, all of the viable opponents, all of the Al Gores and Dick Gephardts and Mario Cuomos were saying George Bush Sr. is unbeatable. It's going to be an extension of Reagan, 8 years of Reagan. It's going to be 4 more years of Bush. And he's just unstoppable. And then the economy went into recession and started to go in the toilet. And George Bush uttered the famous words, read my lips, no new taxes. And all of a sudden the door opened for a guy named Harkin and a guy named Tsongas and this unknown governor from Arkansas named Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And along came Ross Perot, who siphoned 19% of the popular vote.
Yep.
And Bill Clinton won with 43% of the popular vote. So it was a weird planetary alignment of a recession, read my lips, all of these guys that would have trounced Bill Clinton mm-hmm. had they been in the ring. Al Gore would have destroyed, well, I wouldn't put it, I would never count Bill Clinton out, but I think that if Dick Gephardt or any of those three, Mario Cuomo, Dick Gephardt, or Al Gore had stayed in the ring, they said, see you in 96, George Bush is George Bush Sr. is unbeatable.
Right.
And it opened the door for these unknowns, and Bill Clinton got elected because of the economy, because mm-hmm. of read my lips, and because there was a third party candidate, and Ross Perot did to George Bush which Ralph Nader did to Al Gore.
Absolutely.
You know, he got Bill Clinton elected and Ralph Nader got George Bush elected.
Wow. Oh my God, it's so true, and it's just it's crazy, and I don't know what to, I mean, I try very hard to just maintain my emotions in this time, because it's just, you know, I mean, my boyfriend right now is so pissed off. I mean, I'm pissed off too, but he's pissed off because he wants to go to the gym and he doesn't feel comfortable going to the gym, and he loves Gettysburg. He's a Civil War guy. And he could literally be a tour guide. He wants to go spend time in Gettysburg, but neither one of us feel confident with this COVID thing. We want to just, you know, we've taken so many precautions so far, we don't want to get it. And right now these times are so crazy, like I never thought this was going to happen, but I'm just hoping that the United States can pull it together, which leads me to the next question. How confident are you with Merrick Garland and also the DOJ just looking for getting any kind of indictments on the Trump administration for whether it's the 1/6 or if it's taxes or something? Like, how confident are you that that's going to happen?
I'm pretty confident. I'd like to see, you know, some sign of that. And I'd like to see some sign of that soon. I think they're proceeding very, very carefully on the insurrection and on the corruption of the Trump administration. I think people are going to go down. I think heads are going to roll, whether it's Ivanka Trump and her husband or Donald Trump Jr. I don't know. I'm hoping they do enough damage to Trump. If they don't put Trump away, which I truly believe he deserves to be put away.
Yeah,
I believe he's broken the law. But if other people go away and it does enough damage to prevent him from running in 2024, mm-hmm. and if we maintain control or expand control of the House in 2022, anything to just get this guy out of our lives for good. Mm-hmm. I personally think, you know, and you'll probably disagree with this because you'll probably think that he's unelectable. But I personally, you know, when they nominated Trump for the 16 election, I sort of got it, because I knew from firsthand personal experience what a sleazebag and what a thief this guy was, because I witnessed it. He robbed my friends, and anybody who lived in New York in the early mid 80s knew that this guy was a total goon and a total embarrassment. He was not presidential material. He was highly immoral and he was highly unethical, and he was truly a scumbag and a thief. And anybody that did business with him that was in HVAC or electric or demolition, the casinos or on the high rises, they all knew that this guy was a thief. Yeah. I had been at many fundraisers for nonprofits that I ran, or my mother's breast cancer foundation, or the Creative Coalition, where he would come to the event. Sometimes he wasn't even invited because it was going to be hot chicks and celebrities there with the Creative Coalition. He wanted to like hobnob with Susan Sarandon or something.
Yeah.
And he would come there, and then we'd do the paddle raise at the end, and he would raise his hand and commit to, you know, he couldn't embarrass himself and raise his hand for 1,000, 2,000, 5,000. He'd raise his hand in the paddle raise for 10 grand or 25 grand. Maybe not 25 grand, but 10 grand. And then people were like, don't even send the invoice. It's like, he just does that for show. You're never going to get the money.
Wow.
And it's just so, it's just so embarrassing that everybody in the room got it except for him. Like, he didn't realize that everybody in the room knew that he was the punchline to a joke that he was never going to pay. Nobody even wanted him there. And we tried to warn America about that, and nobody would listen.
Yeah.
So, but I understand why we got there, because the system is terribly broken. Mm-hmm. It's been broken for decades, and nobody wants to elect a Beltway insider, an establishment lifer. And when you got to the Republican debates, there were 16, 17 people up there, and three of them were not Beltway insiders. Mm-hmm. Trump, Carly Fiorina, and President Ben Carson. Those three. Carson is out to lunch. He's not charismatic and dynamic and fast enough on his feet politically. No. Obviously, he is intellectually, but politically, he's not savvy enough to be the president. Carly Fiorina failed at Hewlett-Packard, and basically almost everybody that had worked for her or under her despised her. She's inherently unlikable. She killed. She took care of herself. Mm-hmm. And it left... If you were looking to elect somebody who wasn't a Beltway insider, and you wanted to try and start running the government like a business, if you wanted to do to the government what Jack Welch did to General Electric, then, and you wanted to elect somebody who was a businessman, Donald Trump was the only man left standing that wasn't a Beltway insider. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to try something new, and they wanted to try something different. So for that reason, I sort of don't fault them. They just bet on the wrong horse. Mm-hmm. If you had Elon Musk, or if you had Richard Branson, or if you had what's his name from
Bezos, Jeff Bezos,
you know, maybe a Bezos, but the guy from Buffett.
Oh, if you had Warren Buffett
at 55, not at 85.
Right.
If you even had a crazy Mark Cuban, who isn't like sort of a Richard Branson, or Elon Musk, who's sort of a Richard. I mean, Elon Musk is, I don't even know if he's American. I don't think he is. If he has citizenship here. But the one person, if you had a Jack Welch at 55 years old, who was like a slash and burn, I'm going to make this government more effective, more efficient, we're going to run it more responsibly like a corporation, the guy who was that guy, who is a Republican, who if he was on that stage on that day would be the president and would have been reelected, is Mike Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. Now, I know he's a lifelong progressive, and he's a New York liberal, but he started that company. He came out of Goldman, and he started Bloomberg with his own hands. His father didn't have, Donald Trump says, my father gave, he only gave me $1 million. His father didn't give him $1 million. He gave him like $10 million in cash and like $100 million in real estate. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the fact that Donald Trump, with the way his management skills, didn't run that into the ground and file bankruptcy to the point, we all know he filed bankruptcy five or six times, but the fact that that isn't like all up in smoke, I guess we should give him a little bit of credit that he didn't completely ruin everything. But what he was given in those dollars in those days should be worth, he should be worth 10 times what he's worth today, which, by the way, is Donald, that's another thing. Is Donald Trump a billionaire or is Donald Trump worth, like, truly worth all, when you offset his debt, is he worth probably a couple hundred million dollars? That's another, you know,
right,
another conversation for another day and a punchline to another joke. But if Mike Bloomberg left Goldman, he built Bloomberg with his own hands from the ground up. He's a legitimate fiscal conservative, but socially probably too, not progressive for Republicans. He's almost invasive. Yeah. He was the one that wanted to have this, like, you know, the sin tax for tobacco and alcohol. He wanted to have, like, the Slurpee tax, where he wanted to, like, right, you can't feed kids this fattening food, because if you do, they're going to become obese, and they're going to get child diabetes. It's going to cost the healthcare system and the economy X, Y, and Z. I love this stuff about Bloomberg. I mean, if Bloomberg ran and they wanted to elect a guy like Mike Bloomberg, I can honestly tell you, as a very, very progressive Democrat, if that's going to bring America together, I not only would sign off on that, I would raise money for the guy, and I would campaign for the guy, and I would donate to the guy if he was running against the wrong Democrat.
Yeah.
If he was running against the wrong Democrat, I would thoroughly welcome a moderate Republican to run the country with. Of course, I would want the Democrats to maintain control of either,
yes,
the House or the Senate. But, you know, they just bet on the wrong horse. If Mike Bloomberg had made it to the stage, he would have just been, you know, he would be in his second term right now, I believe.
That's interesting. And yeah, I mean, I can totally see that. And the only thing that I'm concerned about any kind of conservative is, and I don't hate all conservatives. I mean, I've had Joe Walsh on my show a couple of different times, and he's a conservative libertarian.
Love him.
Yeah, he's a conservative libertarian, and I am not. But I do, you know, we disagree on lots of stuff, but I do think that he's a good person. But the problem that I have with him is that he will, like, we had an abortion debate, and it was interesting because I basically won. He basically conceded to me without saying I'm against it. He's still against abortion, but because he sees it as a religious issue and he sees it as life, and the government is supposed to protect life. And I couldn't convince him of that. But basically, you know, in the debate, I beat him up. I hit him with facts. But the thing is that these conservatives, so many of them, got us to where we are today with, you know, unfortunately, and it happens in our party too, but there's, I don't know, like casual racism, casual sexism, these kinds of things, when you don't look at them very specifically, they lead to where we are now. They lead to much stronger racism and extremism. And, you know, but I mean, I would happily take a conservative, you know, Bloomberg over a Donald Trump any day of the week, as long as it doesn't lead to the extremism. But what I'm...
Yeah, conservative, there's Bloomberg, it's a Republican Bloomberg, not a conservative Bloomberg.
Okay.
Bloomberg is in a lot of the right places on social issues, on progressive issues. And I, you know, I could honestly tell you that, again, on the issue of abortion, you know, very high voltage issue, mm-hmm. I am both pro-life and pro-choice. Mm-hmm. I'm a pro-choice liberal Democrat who is not pro-abortion. You're not pro-abortion.
No, but I am.
We're both pro-choice.
But I am pro-abortion. I just want to say, the reason I'm pro-abortion, or I'm pro-abortion in the same way that I'm pro-colonoscopy. Like, I don't want to deal with the procedure. I don't like the procedure. I'm pro because it's something that can save lives, literally, because every time you're pregnant, that's a risk. That's what doctors will tell you. And I'm glad that nobody wants to go have the procedure. And for some people, it's really a difficult decision. For other people, it's not difficult at all. And it's not something they're going to spend their lives regretting. Each person who chooses to have an abortion is, you know, going to have their own experience with it. Some are going to mourn.
Yeah, but let me just finish my point. Is that I am pro-choice, but I don't understand why, again, this is an issue I have, like gun control. I asked 5 or 6 questions and they say yes to all of them. And I'm like, we're like 90% of the way there.
Yeah.
Joe is a big Second Amendment guy. And he and I agree on 90% of it. And, you know, if you could make 3 or 4 changes that are not that egregious, that are totally within the realm of possible and reality and common sense, And, you know, you can't bring the founding fathers back today to ask them if they could foresee these weapons that are on the street today. If you could tell them this is what America is going to look like in 250 years, they clearly would have reworded the Second Amendment and made it, you know, much less ambiguous and much more specific about what they intended. But when you're talking about choice, there's so much potential common ground if both sides got together and said, why don't we start having meaningful conversations? Roe versus Wade will never be overturned. It's not going to be overturned. If it goes to the Supreme Court now, it's not going to be over. Texas is going to go to the Supreme Court, and it's not going to be – Texas is going to lose. And they're not going to repeal Roe versus Wade. That law in Texas is going to be stricken down by the Supreme Court as it stands 6-3 right now. I would bet on that. Do you agree with that or no?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. Well, having said that, forget Roe versus Wade because it's never going to be repealed. It's never going to be overturned. Never going to happen. I believe, and I don't understand why both sides don't get together and start talk about, let's have a meaningful conversation about how we reduce unwanted pregnancy.
Agree.
Because if you want to reduce abortion, not eliminate abortion, let's have the conversation about reducing unwanted pregnancy. And that's the very definition of Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
So you're planning for parenthood and you're eliminating pregnancies that were, you know, all of my friends that are conservatives, that whether they're pro-life or not, they're all quick to espouse these conservative Republican social policies until their 15-year-old daughter winds up in the back of a pickup truck with a high school quarterback who's the big stud, and all of a sudden they find out she missed her period and they're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. So they like to apply their values until it's their own daughter that they're that all of a sudden it's now they're, you know, now the script has been flipped. Same thing happened with me with my son. I mean, my son was a bunch of marijuana companies in California. I'm totally jumping the shark here, but a bunch of California weed companies asked me to endorse them and be an ambassador, and I said, like, go get freaking Woody Harrelson or Tommy Chong or like Keith Richards. I mean, why me? I mean, I'm not a noted Hollywood stoner. And they're like, no, but you're very articulate. When you get on TV, you know, you're impressive. You come across, you know, your talking points. Like, we want somebody on TV. And I was like, look, I'm not going to jump into this now. This is when people were raising the capital to launch the companies when weed became legal. Mm-hmm. And then my son became ill. My son had stage 4 cancer.
Oh.
And then he had to use marijuana for medicinal purposes as a teenager, as he was going through 28 rounds of chemo. And then all of a sudden the script got flipped, and all of a sudden I was like, then I was anxious to get out there and spread the word about the menagerie of ways in which chronic pain, PTSD, sleep disorders, anxiety, depression, cancer. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways in which people are benefiting from the medicinal uses of that. So I change the subject, but, you know, I just think that there's a conversation to be had where we could start talking to people on how to raise awareness and educate young people, very young people, in sex education class that will lead to a reduction in unwanted pregnancies.
Rather than
keeping having the Republicans don't want to reverse the Republican elected officials don't want to reverse Roe versus Wade. They just want to keep using it as a weapon to raise money.
Yes,
that's what they want. They want to
keep
stoking the flames. That's what they do. The politics of division to go into their base and get the $10, the $20, the $50, the $100 check.
I agree with that. But on the flip side, I would say that they could still use it if they did overturn it. Then they would use it to say, if you give Democrats power back, then they're going to make abortion legal again. And they would fundraise off of that. I'm not sure what they're going to do. I think they're effectively gutting it anyway. It's just like with the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Act. It's kind of the same thing, especially, you know, while Obama was president, the Tea Party went to town and got rid of all the abortion clinics in Texas and all the abortion clinics in Mississippi and all these red states with these stupid fucking trap laws. And so now women in those states who find themselves pregnant don't have anywhere to go, even though it's legal. But I remember Hillary Clinton getting a lot of crap because she said, I can't remember the exact way she said it, but like, let's keep it rare and I can't remember what else, but rare. And I know some people took issue.
Probably rare and fair. Like, you know, I'd rather be, yeah.
But the idea, like, I know some feminists didn't like that she said that because they took it to mean, and I'm a feminist, but they took it to mean like she was making abortion sound like this big negative thing. No. You know what? I was a single woman for a long time, and there was a couple of different times in my life that I got pregnant, and I was in no position to have a baby, whether it was with the person I was having sex with at that time. It was not a serious relationship. I didn't have a serious relationship until I was 47 years old. I would live paycheck to paycheck. I lived alone in LA for a long time with no family around me. So I was in no position to take on being a mother. And it was, I never wanted to have an abortion. Never. But I would have been, you know, if that situation came up for me, then it, of course I didn't want to be pregnant in the first place, but I would have been so freaking happy to have that choice. And not even, I don't know if happy, relieved. I would have been relieved. And, you know, and it's like that. I think the abortion argument, just to end on this part, I don't want to take too much time on this, but it's like there's so much emphasis put, and I see a lot of men online saying, oh, that must be the hardest decision to make. And it's like, in some cases, it certainly isn't. And it's certainly, you know, I know so many women who have had abortions and don't feel regret. They just knew at that time in their life.
I totally agree with you, and I totally understand. And for any Christians out there that are listening that think this is the this is like the Antichrist, all I can say is, especially to them, I think we have to do better. Always pro-choice, never repeal Roe versus Wade, educate people so that they can plan for parenthood, and we can significantly reduce unwanted pregnancies. And, you know, people, I guess what they'd like to hear from our side is that they'd like to hear people taking I don't know how to articulate this without coming across the wrong way, but they don't want abortion used as a form of birth control. Mm-hmm. They prefer that number that it's used far less than it is. So if that's offensive to somebody, you, my wife, me, I'm a guy talking about it, so I should stay the hell out of it. It's like, again, it's your choice. Let me first of all comment on that, and then I have one more thing I wanted to say about a book that I read that I wanted to make sure I got this in.
Okay,
what do you think about what I just said?
As far as using abortion for birth control, it is birth control, but I wish I could have. Somebody said something online the other day that was perfect, and I wish I saved it, but it was like, oh, I'm just not going to brush my teeth, and when they all fall out, I'll just go get new dentures. No woman I have ever known thought, well, I'm just going to go have sex, and oh, if I get pregnant, I'll just run and get an abortion. I mean, there are women that I know who have multiple abortions, but most women I know, when they got pregnant and didn't want to be pregnant, it wasn't something like, oh, I'm just going to run to the abortion clinic. And it's not like that. It's just,
of course,
you know, each woman's going to have their own thing.
You know, if you've had an abortion a few times, then I would hope that moving forward, you would try to be, I don't know what the word is, be more cautious and more careful so that you didn't have to, you could avoid that in the future.
Well,
because I know
totally,
it's a tough decision to make.
I totally get that. But that only takes into account women who are having consensual sex and maybe making some mistakes. There's also the women who are stuck in relationship, like abusive relationships. And
there's also the guys rolling it too. I mean, this is not, you know, so let me just finish. I wanted to say something interesting, and it's. I'll try to condense this as much as I can, but there was a book everybody was reading on the beach years ago, 15 years ago, that you've heard of or read called Freakonomics.
Oh,
everybody
was
raving about it. And I finally, you know, said, I got to read this book. I hate doing the thing that like everybody else is doing, but I'm like, everybody's raving about this book. I got to read it. So I read Freakonomics. I read chapter after chapter after chapter. I'm like, that was a good chapter. But to be honest with you, I didn't really learn, like, I sort of was familiar with that concept. You know, I'd read another chapter. That was good. I didn't really learn anything new. Mm-hmm. You know, I read lots and lots of chapters, and I'm like, why is everybody raving about this book? Because this isn't really like mind-blowing and earth-shattering. And then I read this book about this chapter about Roe versus Wade. And they said they were trying to figure out why It wasn't about Roe versus Wade. It was the chapter was about crime reduction when President Clinton took office. Mm-hmm. And violent crime in America dropped in 93, 94, 95, like 30% violent crime dropped year after year after year. And of course, the dot-com economy was booming and crime was plummeting, and Clinton was sitting there taking credit for all of it. Mm-hmm. When really, you know, Bill Gates probably had more to do with it, and Steve Jobs had more to do with it, but Clinton did a great job and got reelected. And so I'm reading this chapter, and they're trying to figure out why the crime rate is dropping, and they talked about the drug of choice shifting from an aggressive crack cocaine back to heroin, so they disproved it wasn't related to street drugs. Mm-hmm. They tried to relate it to policing tactics, and they talked about Giuliani and Bratton and the squeegee guys and the graffiti guys. Mm-hmm. And they're like, wait a second, you know, 95% of the country doesn't utilize those same policing methodologies, so it's not that either. And then they talked about the booming dot-com economy of Clinton, and they went into pockets of the country that was not the beneficiary of that economy, like upstate New York, Buffalo, Rochester. There were certain areas that were not booming from the economy, and yet the crime rate was dropping. Hmm. So they sort of quasi-disproved it because there were areas that were still in the Rust Belt and the Sun Belt that weren't benefiting from the economy, but violent crime was dropping at the same rate. Hmm. So then they say something extremely, extremely radical, which is that Roe versus Wade gave abortion rights to lower middle class and poor people, not, you know, minorities in the ghetto, mm-hmm. white people in Appalachia, poor white people all across the country. And they said that in 1993, that was 20 years into Roe versus Wade. And it's very controversial, but they were basically saying that anybody that was born into these three or four variables, a broken home, lack of college education, unemployment, drug addiction. Mm-hmm. If you had those three or four variables, the probability of you going on to lead a life of crime or violent crime was like 10, I'm making this up, tenfold, 11-fold, 12-fold higher, mm-hmm. than someone that was born in a family that had parents that stayed together. There was no alcoholism. One of the parents was college educated, blah, blah, blah. Huh. So basically the argument was that the crime rate was dropping, mm-hmm. because of the accessibility of abortion to people that lived in these circumstances, and would be violent criminals were now not born. The right. Young males, white or black, that were born into those poor circumstances that would lead to crime, that would have been turning 19 and 20 in 1993, 1994, 1995, mm-hmm. those future criminals were now not being born. Wow. That is an incredibly radical thing to say.
Yeah.
And I may have screwed up what that chapter says, but I just thought that was like earth shattering. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to be kidding me. You're saying the crime rate is dropping by 30% a year because would-be criminals weren't born.
Right.
That's basically what the chapter said.
Yeah.
Pretty radical. Pretty radical.
Yeah, you know, I've actually kind of heard that before. I didn't know it was in that book, but that's a fascinating concept, and it makes sense. And, you know, I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody they should like abortion or anything. I mean, I certainly want to defend it because I think that it's necessary. But, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion about it. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it saves lives. It in so many different ways, because so many people tend to think about abortion like the single woman who's being promiscuous getting pregnant. But there's so many, you know, whether it's rape or abusive relationships, or there's even the, you know, there's girls that are born in red states and they're taught not, you know, you should be a virgin, and you shouldn't use birth control and this and that. And then they don't know what they're doing. I mean, I wrote a book with my mother called The Virgin Diaries, and we interviewed people about their first sexual experiences. And part of the reason I wanted to do that is because as a country, so specifically as a country, we're so uptight about sex, and we think that if we introduce our children to sex, that they're gonna, that's like gonna be a green light that they're gonna run out and have sex. And when I was a kid, I was interested in it, but I didn't want to have it. I was kind of like a prude and scared, and sex scared me, but it was everywhere. And it's like education. It's about education and having the availability to be able to, like you said, plan your family the way you want to makes all the difference. And I, you know, I mean, I hope that Roe isn't destroyed, but I hope that if it is, I hope that we are able to come up with a way to codify it in the Constitution so that it just sticks and they can't do anything about it. Because they're always going to use fear and to fundraise off of. So I told you I would only.
They've been doing that with Roe, they've been doing it for decades, but also they do it with the National Endowment, with Robert Mapplethorpe and all that, Jesse Helms and Andre Serrano stuff. They always like to turn things into a political football. Yes. They drive wedges and they try to fundraise off of it.
Totally. That's always the case. But okay, so I told you I was going to keep you for an hour. So before I let you go, I've just got one more question for you. And you kind of touched on this a little, but maybe you'll think of all something right. different.
I'm pulling up to my doctor's appointment, so I'll give you the best answer I can. I was supposed to be there at 12:15. I'm running a few minutes late, but only for you, Kimberly.
Okay. What
Kimberly
do we...
with a second E. You thanked me for spelling it right when I first texted you. I love that.
That is important to me.
I spelled it Kimberly with a second E, and you were like, thank you for knowing that.
What do we have to be hopeful about, Billy?
What do we have to be hopeful about?
Yeah.
Oh boy, it's such a tough question because it's such a tough time.
Yeah.
It has been for the last couple of years between the divisiveness of Trump and the isolation and loneliness of quarantine and the pandemic. But I think the future is bright. I think, with the right progressive moral leadership, you talk to all of these Christians out there, it's like, I live my life more by the teachings of Christ, and I'm not even a Christian. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I just think doing the thing that's morally right on social issues, which is what liberals do, there's hope in that regard. I think the economy is going to recover. I think Delta is going to run its course, and hopefully there won't be another variant that comes in and devastates us and rocks the economy again. I just look forward to finding a way, and hopefully it doesn't take another 9/11 type of event to unify the country, but it may take the right type of leader, like a JFK or like an MLK. Actually, that's not going to work with 30% of the country, not an MLK. But I'm not really sure what the answer is, but I think progress, I think healing, I think going after Citizens United, mm-hmm. I think addressing the issue of climate change, mm-hmm. I think economic recovery, I think access and opportunity, I think all of that we have to continue to fight for. And if we have the improvement that I anticipate with President Biden and the future of liberalism and the Democratic Party, I think we're headed back in that direction. I think if we elect Trump or the wrong Republican anytime, either in 24 or beyond, I think clearly I think we're headed in the wrong direction again. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I just want to say thanks for being on the show. Talking to you is so much fun. I really enjoyed this conversation. And before you go, why don't you tell everybody where to find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Billy Baldwin and on Instagram at the Billy Baldwin. Those are the only two social platforms that I have. Again, Twitter at Billy Baldwin and Instagram at the Billy Baldwin. And I'm usually talking politics on Twitter, and I'm usually telling crazy fun stories about my wacky things going on in my life or in my family or in the world on Instagram.
Yes, I love your Zoolander's Muse picture on Instagram. I know you got to go. So you can find me on Twitter, author Kimberly, KimberlEY, and you can find my books on Amazon. Thank you, Billy. Have a good doctor's visit.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So much fun. Let's do it again.
Okay, we will. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.